Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus's strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. We are so excited for you to be on and listening to this episode today. And I'm your host for this episode, Ben Borgman. I am the Executive Director of Disciple First, and it's my pleasure to be joined, as always, Old Faithful over here.
That's me.
Tried and true. Always here.
Always here.
Always here. No, it is a joy to have Craig Etheridge here back with us again today.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Ben. Good to see you. And always great to be on the podcast. And man, I'm looking forward to today. We got an exciting podcast ahead of us today talking about disciple making and church planting.
Yeah.
And how those two fit together. And we've got a great guest on the program as well.
Yeah, we do. And it's going to be really good because normally these are two different conversations. They're normally not, they got even different conferences. Mm. You know, you don't merge together. But, you know, our guest today is Clay Holcomb. And welcome to the show, Clay.
Thank you, guys.
Cue the applause.
Oh, yeah. Where is it? I thought you said it would be here for sure.
That's right. And so Clay is the executive director of the Cross Creek Network. Mm. And so we're going to have him tell you a little bit about him, just him personally and what the Cross Creek Network does. But again, it's very unique and it's very distinctive that we're going to have this conversation. And really what Clay does and what he's driving at is this: how do we bring together these two worlds, these two things? How do we actually, that disciple making movement, the outflow actually should be church planting.
Right.
And so that's really what we're going to talk about. And that's what he spends a whole lot of time and direction, does a great job of leading that network. So I'm just kick it over to you, Clay. Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us about the network.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So my wife is Leanne. I might tell you a little bit about my family. Leanne and I have been married for coming up on 30 years in just a few days.
Well, there you
so
go.
We're right. excited about that. That's going to be
better be doing something great. Good for the anniversary. If it's
yeah, well, we've got some plans. We've already done some things. And so,
you know, do they count? Does that count toward it?
We've credit it as that because I'll be out of town when I'm on my anniversary and I will be,
with me.
Somebody else. I was going to say with another person. So
you could be with me
trying to keep my wife's, you know, the ire down a little bit because I will be with you for the anniversary. But we've been married for 30 years. We have four kids and two precious daughters-in-law that we love dearly. And, we raised our kids in mostly on the West Coast, and so we planted churches in Houston, Texas, and in Baton Rouge, and then moved to the West Coast in 2009, moved to the Pacific Northwest, lived in Portland, Oregon, planted churches there, and then we, you know, I started leading church planting for the North American Mission Board, commonly known as Send Network. I led it for Oregon and Portland first, and then Oregon and Washington, Seattle, you know, for all that area up there. But the big thing was we just lived our lives for 14 years in a very unchurched context and raised our family there, raised our kids there. Our kids' spiritual foundations were formed in that soil versus the soil that I grew up in. And not only just the soil of that culture, but also the soil of church planting. And so church planting and missionary work in those environments is just really embedded deep into my not just my love, but it's really just a part of who I am. It's become a part of the way I think now. And what's really interesting is it's even more so in the lives of my kids. And so we got to experience somewhat organically the fusion of church planting and disciple making just through our lives. Mm. And to me, it's a little bit of a snapshot of a model of like, well, what that should look like in the church. Yeah. But oftentimes in the church, we kind of have to bring those two together. We kind of have to manufacture it a little bit. But I feel blessed to the Lord that was just sort of the path that we were on, and that's what our lives look like now.
So, now, why do you think that is? Why is there a, not necessarily disparity, not necessarily chasm, but why in the church planting world, there's not a lot of talk about disciple making, and why in the disciple making world, there's not a lot of talk about church planting? Why is that?
Yeah, I think probably in the church planting world, there is a time expeditious urgency in so many ways to get things going. Often the language that seems to have gained the most traction in church planting over the last 10 years is kind of the language of entrepreneurship. It's the lean startup stuff. It's venture capitalist. It's all those things. And I love that world. I love learning about those things and all their creative ideas and you do need money. You do need all this stuff, but there's a sense of urgency that a church plant needs to gain momentum. And you hear about that. You hear about critical mass and momentum and gaining traction and all those words that are, they're valuable and they're certainly relevant. We see church plants or church plant initiatives that start, and if they don't get some critical mass, if they don't get a level of energy, if there doesn't get some sort of compulsion, the why this should happen, it will fade and it will die. And so I think church planters really are pushed to just go, move. And they're often younger. They're often a temperament that is that way. I was that way when I was younger. I had a hard time kind of sticking with things, and I realized, man, I just wasn't bent that way. And so when I found church planting, it was refreshing. So I do think the dynamics in church planting push it away or push it toward go, move. You got to get it moving. So I think the church planter that doesn't have a holistic view of what he's doing can easily leave, I'll just say, the development of people aside. I know we're talking about disciple making, but I think he could forget that all of this that's happening is really founded most stably on the foundation of developed people. So I think on the church planting side, that's where you see that. On the disciple making side, I don't have as much experience in that world, but my experience is that world, it can, on the opposite side, can tend to be more insular, more inward focused, more developmental, it's focusing on the devotional side of life, focusing on my personal growth. And you also have an established system in the church in America. You have Sunday schools and small groups that are already kind of bent toward that. So that can make that disciple making culture initiative gravitate toward those things that are already established and just sort of helping refine those things, which can take them out of the field of we got to go out. So that's my experience on those two areas.
You know, as we're talking about this, I think I want to click it down a little bit deeper. I think that there has been over the last 50 years, this idea that discipleship, and we're going to talk about that word, is actually anti-evangelism.
Yeah.
That if you're in the discipleship, you're not really about sharing the gospel. You're not really about moving forward. You're not really about, and certainly church planting is all about reaching people that are lost, and it's highly evangelistic.
Yeah.
And so the notion is, if you're in a discipleship, that's, like you said, very insular, inward looking, and it's almost anti-evangelism. You could go back to, I think it was McGavern, maybe misquoting him here, that actually said it as much, you know, discipleship will kill any evangelistic efforts. And so it's almost like disciple making is the enemy of church planting or evangelism, because you don't want to get that in your church because it'll just shut everything down.
Right.
And my response to that is that discipleship is not even a biblical word.
Yeah. We need to sink the ship.
Right.
We need to sink the discipleship, don't we?
That's it.
It needs to go down.
We need to torpedo.
A submarine torpedo.
That's right.
Another shirt idea,
that
Craig.
Ship needs to sink, all right? Because that is not even a biblical concept, discipleship. Now, Jesus was about disciple making, and you can't argue that Jesus was not evangelistic, nor that his efforts in making disciples who multiply didn't lead to churches being planted and movements being made. But I think you're right. This idea that discipleship, that's this inward thinking, spiritual growth, navel gazing kind of attitude, is not Jesus.
Right.
And it's not disciple making. So when we champion here disciple making, we're talking about evangelism. It starts with evangelism, the end with evangelism. You're developing leaders that will multiply. It's all about growth. And when you have that mm-hmm. as your understanding, well, then there should be this natural growth from, yeah, we're about movement making, and that's going to be experienced through planting churches, which yeah. we see in the book of Acts.
Right, right, right.
And that's a clear distinctive of us as disciple first, as you know, just in when we talk about disciple first, not kind of take a break from Cross Creek Network, but with Disciple First, that's our distinctive, is we are looking to Jesus for our strategy for the church. And that goes from exploring, you know, engaging explorers or evangelism, mm-hmm. and includes all the way to multiplication. And so it, for us, it's not a stretch to say, oh, this should be the outcome. Look in the book of Acts. What happened with the movement that Jesus created?
Right.
Churches were planted.
Right.
And so for us, it's not this foreign idea. But it is how do we get synergy between the two camps? How do we make this a part of one conversation versus this separate conversation like it's been historically?
Yeah, and I would just say that there's misnomers on both sides.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If church planting, as you articulated really well, can just all be about promotion of entrepreneurship and that kind of thing, and forget this is a spiritual enterprise of right. multiplying leaders
right.
that will multiply themselves. And the discipleship, which I now have this wonderful picture of it sinking, is a misnomer as well. So you got a little confusion on both right. sides. So it's no wonder that this doesn't seem to be together. Yeah. And yet, when you look at Jesus as a model, this and the book of Acts, you see this really coming to bear. And that's really what we're talking about mm-hmm. in the Cross Creek Network. Mm-hmm. That's what you're championing
yeah.
in the Cross Creek Network.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've seen a lot of really good I used to tease and say, I've never seen a bad church planting prospectus. I've never seen a bad logo. I have seen a few.
Yeah, you know you've seen some bad logos.
I've seen a few. But most of them are really good. Most of the plans on paper look really great. But when you get down to it, if there's no development of people, and I've even drilled down even more recently into realize that what really makes a church plant sort of the intangible that I can tell if this church plant's going to make is if I'm there at a place or if I'm around their people long enough and there's a sense of us in that group of people. Mm-hmm. You could lay aside all of whatever the mission statement is and you know all the things that brought them to that. I don't even have to understand that. But if we can get in with a group of people, spend a significant time with them, and you get a sense that these people all feel like these are my people and this is my place and my mission, then you know, okay, this church plant's got hope.
Yeah.
And that comes through pouring into one another, caring for one another, and then turning that outward as well.
Yeah. And on the other side, how many church plants do you see that are failing, struggling, mm-hmm. and they're like, we don't have enough leaders, we don't have enough people, mm-hmm. and it's because they're not developing. Maybe yeah. the guy's just preaching and yeah. then thinking it's yeah. going to magically
right.
happen.
Right.
And he's not in there building relationships, investing, training, yes. and then multiplying yes. himself. Yes. And so it can't just be, churches can't be just planted from a celebrity no. on the platform.
No.
You got to, and that's not how Jesus did.
No.
You know, he invested to multiply. And so that is, I think, a uniqueness of the network mm-hmm. is that we're really championing that.
Right.
Not saying the other stuff isn't important, but we are yeah. saying that this is a missing ingredient yeah. that is essential and quite practical.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not only biblical, it's very practical.
Yeah.
If you don't do this, it's just not going to work.
Right. Yeah. And it's really, I think it's really encouraging for me when we think about the vision that we have at Cross Creek Network is on a large scale. We'll talk about this, I suppose, but we'll talk about the vision for the hubs and all that. But I think on the ground, really where that vision plays out is that church planter getting the vision for developing that first group of people that's around him. That's where the feet hit the ground. And so if when he's developing his core group and they're out raising money and they're developing the logos and they're doing all that stuff that you still want to do, if he can view that group of people as people that he's discipling and developing and has a plan for that Jesus model of developing them, to me, that's where the synthesis comes together. Yeah. And then that culture starts to embed itself in that initial group of people. And then, you know, it doesn't just magically continue on. You have to keep working at it, yeah. you know, but that's critical. So, yeah.
So I want to ask you about the network. This network is not just about churches in the United States.
Mm-hmm, right.
So again, these principles, yeah. You know, the venture capitalist concept may not work in, right. in West Africa.
It doesn't.
Yeah. You know, or in a rural context or right. something like that. And so these principles you're championing do work anywhere. Mm-hmm. So you might want to speak to that. The network is not just about churches in the United States. So right. where are the churches that we have in the network now?
Right, right. Well, I think any great biblical church planting strategy should be able to work anywhere. If it doesn't work anywhere, then its biblical basis needs to be examined, I think. And so we have church plants and in all over the world, like Craig was saying, we have West Africa, Central Africa, Israel, now in Cambodia, and some other works around North America as well. And the thing that is, I think, most powerfully seen through a disciple-making model of church planting is that it doesn't rely on the typical North American strategies that we utilize. And I'm not disparaging those. I mean, in our culture, those work, and we have to do those. But when you if that's all you have, and you don't have the advantages of being in a North American culture, if you're going to Israel or Romania or Burkina Faso, and none of your strategies work, well, then you don't have a biblical strategy. Yeah. And so the Jesus model of disciple-making, it works everywhere because it's based upon Jesus' development of an individual, and then that individual pouring into somebody else, that group growing, and then that group growing in a way that is relevant and works in that culture. So we have, to what you were saying, Craig, we have church plants all over the world. They all look very different. Mm-hmm. They look very different. And that's a huge challenge on the back, on the operational side that we have to right. deal with regularly, you know.
No doubt.
Funding and training and all that. But when you drill down deep into it, we all agree on the principles of utilizing Jesus' methodology for discipling, training, raising up, and sending out people. And that's what our network runs on, is that DNA. It's not the operational basis that's based out of a Dallas-Fort Worth church. You know, we've had to learn to strip down the things that are cultural and hold on to the things that are biblical. But that's how we in North America, in Texas, can really be a part of multiplication. I would just say that to your audience, if you're a church pastor in Mississippi or Georgia or wherever, being a part of a multiplication movement is not just about supporting something that's out there. That's great, you know. But if you employ a disciple-making methodology, not just in your church, but also in your church planting, then you can be a part of that everywhere you go. Craig and I are going to be doing some training. Ben and I have done some training in other places, and we don't go there and train them on our, you know, our Dallas-Fort Worth church planting strategy. We train on Jesus' disciple-making principles.
Right.
And that's the beauty of that. That, I mean, I don't think it was an accident that Jesus gave us a clear strategy mm-hmm. That actually works beyond, you know, Israel went, you know, 2,000 yeah. years ago walking through Israel, right? I don't think that was the, I think he was actually here giving us a strategy yeah. that would apply, that's the genius of it, to apply across all time, all right. culture, in any context.
Right.
And
it's
that's
adaptable.
And that's why we've seen that, and it's actually pretty freeing that you don't have to come up with this mm-hmm. great, God's given us creativity, God's given us experiences, so how do we take His model and apply that to our context using those gifts and skills and creativity that we right. have, not coming up with the whole strategy on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the things that happened in church history where we veered off that course mm-hmm. have hurt a lot of people and been very traumatic at times. So we just got to stay on, but we're kind of bent to want to veer off yeah. this path, right? Yeah. We kind of think, well, we got technology now. We don't have to do it quite that way. And coming back to what is the pathway that Jesus had is essential.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of our voices mm-hmm. kind of out there in the wilderness, maybe, is just saying, hey, Jesus does have a path. We need to stay on it.
Yeah. I'm hearing that from a lot of, the church planters that I'm interacting with, because I meet new guys that we kind of adopt into our network as well. I mean, we're launching churches, but we're also adopting people. And the people that we would be adopting are those that we that I'll meet, or some of you guys will meet, who are hungering for a disciple-making mm-hmm. model. They may not even know that that's what they're hungering for. Most of it, what it is they just know that the conventional church planting strategy or church planting culture and ethos, I should say, yep. of the last 20 years, they know, maybe they've even tried it. They may have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's just not working, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And they're looking around and going, how am I going to reach this incredibly secular city?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. The environment is changing rapidly,
yeah, very rapid.
More and more and more secular.
Yes.
And so we're getting to a post-Christian environment context that really requires a different look at the strategy.
It really does.
And that really points to, I want to throw this question out there and kind of really dig into that point a little more. Why do you see church planting, and especially planting disciple-making churches, as an urgent matter? Mm. Like, why is this such an urgency that we do this?
Right. What is not new is the needs of man. You know, I think we are not more lost today than we were 2,000 years ago. Mm. You know, I like to remind guys when they talk about their church planting context being very, very difficult. I said, you know, when Jesus launched the church, there was no church. Like, literally, not one church, you know, so he had probably
anywhere.
The most, he had the most, you know, raw ground as anybody. However, and so the needs of man, the lostness of man, the condition of the soul, that's not changed. And there's been times in the history of mankind that have been desperately wicked, you know, and so it's not that it's necessarily more wicked today than it was before.
Yeah.
However, Craig, you used the term a minute ago, talking about secularization and rapid movement. I think these are the things that do urgently accelerate the need for church planting. In North America, I'll just say in North America and Europe, because this is not necessarily the case in other places, North America and Europe, the established church that grew up in the 19th century, in the 20th century, you know, that church is, by all stats, in decline. And it seems to be a precipitous fall that is... It's not changing.
All right.
So on just a statistical viewpoint, there is a realization that we have to start more churches just to break even, barely. Okay.
And population growth also factored in there as well.
Right. Population, yeah. And so the percentages, we keep losing ground.
Right.
Not gaining ground. Mm-hmm. You add to that, though, this issue of the viral nature of culture today. Rapidity, is that a word? Rapidity? I don't know. Rapidly, how fast things move. Those things, I think, as much as anything else, really accelerate the need for church planting, because if a church, you know, the gospel is the message of Jesus Christ, and you can share that with anybody on the street any day, any time, and we need to. But establishing a church is, what are you doing? You're establishing a body of people, and a body of people is a stable people. It's a group of people that come together. It's, like I said earlier, that sense of us type thing. In a transient community, the very construct of being a part of a community is being pulled at. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have the same amount of time to develop that community that needs to happen. So the need for more church planting is being accelerated by the way culture is moving, the viral nature of things, the speed of things. You just don't have 10, 15 years to build up a group of people and then build a building. And, you know, you don't have that. Everybody that you were reaching in the first year has already been gone, and two or three cycles have come and gone too.
Especially in these large population areas where there's a high turnover.
Yeah.
Also, you got isolation too. I think just our culture becoming more isolated on our phones, isolated with technology is isolated us more. And so people are not as open to meeting new people and going to a new group.
That's
And then you've got the bad church stuff that's out there and people are suspect of weird things, right, and who are these weird people, and right, why are they meeting in a school? So you got a lot of headwind, yeah, going against you. Mm-hmm. But I think, to your point, we desperately need more and more and more church plant. Yeah. I hear not pastors, but church members say, well, we need more churches. I mean, every time I go around, there's church on every corner.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. But they're dead churches. They're dying churches. They're unhealthy, and they're certainly not disciple making.
And we have to, and I think within disciple making, church planting is, it's underneath even it's next to another definition, and that would be just churches that look different. Churches that still have all of the New Testament establishments that we would look for in a church, but it has to be something that looks different, reaches different types of people, mm-hmm, has different infrastructure, meetings, whatever. It just has to be adaptable in those places and in those times. When I was in Portland, we had a metropolitan area, you know, and very, very secular, and I would do this in Seattle as well. I would take pastors from churches that were in the Bible Belt. They would come on a vision tour. You know, one of the things I would do is I would take them down to the city, and we just walk the streets a little bit, and then we would stop somewhere, and I'd say, okay, now how would you start a church right here in this place, and have them wrestle with the logistical dynamics of going, there's no building, there's no parking, there's no neighborhood, there's not even a gas station or a grocery store right here, but yet there's thousands and thousands of people that live above our heads here in these apartments. How would we do this?
You know, when we're in New York City,
yeah,
it's the same thing. Like, there are millions of people, but you can't get to them because you can't get in their building.
Yeah.
And you can't get to them at work.
Right.
And the only thing you have is on the street, is like, or social media. Exactly. And it's just, it's really a challenge. Yeah.
It makes you just stop and think, mm-hmm, like a missionary. All right, what will we do? And if disciple making is not one of the things that you're equipped to engage in, then you're going to just scramble, and you're going to spend tons and tons of money, mm-hmm, on minimal fruit over time. So,
yeah. So we desperately need new churches, but we need disciple making, multiplying churches. Uh-huh. And that's really what the network is about. Tell us a little bit about the hubs. Mm. You mentioned that earlier. Yeah. What is a hub?
Yeah. So our goal is to establish 12, what we call Cross Creek Network hubs, disciple making, church planting hubs across the world. And for us, those hubs would be, they're really the focal point of multiplication in that area. So when we were looking for a hub, or when we're developing a hub is a church primarily. It's a church that has a pastor that is not just bought into disciple making, but practicing it, and has a history of bearing fruit, not only himself, but also that the church has a church planting history as well. And so what we would love to do, what our goal would be, is to make our network a multiplying organization as well. It's where we're pouring into multipliers financially through training, and then just through encouragement, all the things we're doing, and that we would ultimately see the multiplication of Cross Creek Network primarily played out through those hubs. And so we would trust those hub leaders with local decision making, a local strategy, which gets back to the whole, we're not trying to do a North American type church plant in Burkina Faso or Israel. So as long as we have that relationship and that agreement on the covenant and the philosophy of ministry, and other things as well, then we know that, all right, this is an area or a leader that is reproducing. So we're not trying to put our banner on everything. We just want to see disciple making happen. Currently, right now, status of our network, we've got 4 church planting hubs, and so our goal is to raise up 12 in the next 10 years. So I feel like we're on the way toward that.
Yeah, and we've got some kind of in the pipeline, mm-hmm, so to speak, yep, that are emerging,
right,
are exciting to see. You know, man, there's just a lot of opportunity out there. You know,
really
that's one thing that psychs me.
Yeah.
Everywhere we go, we just see there are lost people and people that need to be reached, and a wonderful opportunity to get involved, mm-hmm, in that. And a church that can get involved with this without having to do it all by themselves.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they can join lock arms with the Cross Creek Network.
Absolutely.
And come and meet a planter and go take a trip out there and support, you know, or help dream with them about how to reach their area. There's a lot of ways that any pastor and anyone listening to this podcast, there's a place for you to join in. And to be a part of that and lead your congregation to be more missional in multiplying around the world.
Yeah, there's multiple ways, pastors listening to this podcast, that I would share with you. One would be the more obvious, is that we could connect you with one of our planters. And we can do that in multiple ways. We can just give you their contact. I mean, or you can come join us at our summit that's in November 4th, 5th, and 6th this year. We're going to be starting hosting our own vision tours over the next year. And so it may be that we connect you with one of those opportunities to be in their environment and see what they do. The other side of it is, you know, I'm biased to church planters. I think church planters are some of the best leaders in all of our our family. And I've not met any of them. There's not one church planter that's in our network, I should say, that is not a highly skilled leader that can train your church in something that you're doing, specifically if it's related to what they're doing. And so our planters can be a resource to you as well. Your world is changing. Everybody says it. Our world is changing. It's not like it was 20 years ago. A lot of these guys, whether they're in New York City or Las Vegas or Montreal, they are right in the thick of the secularization, and they can come and be a value add to your church as well. And I think that's what makes a great partnership when it goes both ways. So yeah, there's myriad of ways that you can be involved with us and with our church planters.
You know, you and I were just talking with one of our new church planters that's planting in the east of Dallas.
Yeah.
And he was telling us that this whole region, that whole area is mostly Indian and Muslim and Buddhist. Yeah. And we're like,
this was rural East Texas 25 years ago.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I was shocked by that demographic study and how desperately we need churches planted in there to reach that. So you're right. These planters have skills that could come and coach you up on how to reach people in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They're like, the Pastor Israel is so good at training how to reach a Jewish population that lives in your neighborhood.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so this conversation is really exciting. I really like thinking about it, because it's fun for us too, from a Disciple First standpoint, to think about how can we help contextualize these things to planters, because a lot of what the work that Craig's done and that our team has done is really on an established church, how more like revitalization or changing culture. And so it's been really fun to engage in that. I want to continue this conversation, man, but I do want to take a quick break, and then we'll come right back and get some more thoughts from Clay and Craig.
Imagine what it would look like to be part of a movement. Imagine raising up church leaders. Imagine launching disciple-making churches all over the world. Imagine you being a part of growing God's kingdom far beyond your own city. Well, you don't have to imagine, it's happening, and you can get involved. The Cross Creek Network is a church planting network committed to planting disciple-making churches in cities like Las Vegas, New York, Montreal, Lusaka, and entire regions like Asia, the Middle East, and Africa. If your heart's desire is to plant churches that make disciples and multiply, then join us. Together, we can make a difference that lasts for eternity. To find out more, go to crosscreeknetwork.com. That's crosscreeknetwork.com.
All right. Well, welcome back to our Urgency of Church Planting conversation we're having with Craig and Clay, and just really learning more about the Cross Creek Network and this urgency of planting disciple-making churches. And really, we've had a great conversation today. I think we've covered a lot. Clay, do you mind sharing just maybe a story of like something that's been super encouraging to you? Because you've been doing this for what, two years you've been over the Cross Creek Network? Mm-hmm. Share a story of something that's just been really encouraging as you've been kind of putting your hand to the plow and forming these relationships and helping these church plants. Just share something encouraging with us.
Oh man, where do I start? these guys are my heroes, man. I love these guys. Man, I could tell so many. I'll start with one. So when I first came on board, I was meeting some guys, and I went to a city and met several planters and was still trying to figure out my own rhythm for bringing guys on and just kind of still learning our organization a little bit. But I was sharing the basics of the DNA at the time, even as I understood where we were. And so I remember meeting with a couple of guys in one place and didn't think much about it. Came back home and was still trying to figure out what was going on. I didn't even have my pitch yet. You know, I didn't even have my sales pitch, you know, talking about entrepreneurship, and I didn't have it. So I felt I was behind the eight ball already because I do love that kind of stuff. And I went back a couple months later and ran into one of these planters at another event. And we had not scheduled to meet. He just found me in the hallway and you know, reconnected, said, "Hey man, how you doing?" And he starts telling me, he said, "I just want you to know, we have already taken so much of this content." And this was just, I think I just gave him the Growth series and maybe another book. And I didn't even really order it for him and put it all together. And next thing you know, man, they had already gone back in and internalized some of this stuff. It was already on their website. They were already trying to restructure what the Young Church plant at the time, what it already was, around the principles that we were sharing. And so to me, that was one of my first stories of going, wow, this guy not only gets it, he genuinely wants this in his church, because I had nothing to do with him making the website that way and changing it up. You know, God just got a hold of him, and that was incredible. Another, we have a church plant in our network, a little bit older church, and they've seen some tremendous success on what most would be considered an attractional level, and because they do the attractional stuff really, really good. And let me just make sure and disclaimer and say this: we are pro good music and good preaching, right, Craig?
Amen.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't like bad music and bad preaching.
No, no, no. This is not. We are not that network. Sometimes
we're not that network.
Sometimes you can get into this, and you know, I've been to some places and they say, "Oh, we're just organic," and I'm like, "No, it's just not good." That's what, I don't know what it is, but I've been there. I've been to that church, but this church plant that's a part of our network, man, they kill it with in terms of their music and their presentation and all this stuff, and you could easily get the idea that this church is all about the attraction.
Yeah.
We've spent the last really couple years with them, not just being friendly with us, but them coming to us and saying, "Hey, we have got to have this type of disciple making in our church, in our context, not forsaking all the other stuff." But and so now they're a church plant a little farther down the road, but now they're coming back in. And they're taking all their leadership through disciple making training, disciple making principle, and they are bought in. So to me, I love that, because you know that disciple making is really embedded itself into the heart of that leader and that leadership team, because they were already very successful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they could have just kept running down that road. And so that's a case study to me to go, all right,
yeah,
guys are really buying into this.
That really says to the value that they see in that too, because it's, yeah, we all know it's not the easy way.
Right.
No,
investment, exactly.
Investing, developing relationships, pouring into people, getting in their lives, that is not the easy way to do ministry.
Exactly.
I tell you, a highlight experience for me in the last couple of years, we just kind of cast this vision of the hubs, and we had plants already all around the world in various continents. And we had some great leaders that had emerged, but we'd never asked them to be a hub leader and kind of cast that vision to them and how they were going to be kind of the ground central, so to speak, of multiplying movement in their area. And so Clay did the great job of, you know, interacting with these guys and kind of recruiting them to that. And they were, yes. And so we had our first hub meeting. Mm. Remember that?
Yep.
And I remember going into this small room and we're all sitting around there and we're talking through these seven core convictions that now are in the His Way Still Works book. Yeah. But back then it was still, that book wasn't written. And we were just talking through these core convictions that we could all agree on. And we had a hub leader, a very strong, prominent a man in Burkina that is like the government looks to him for leadership. We have a man from Southeast Asia that is networked with a huge network of believers there that are persecuted. We had a man from Israel. We had a man from
Montreal,
yes, in the room. We had several of these guys. Mm-hmm. And it was just the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe just personally for me to see these leaders coming together and saying yes to what we all agree on and yes to each other. And we're all on the same team.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't know. I still get goosebumps by that, man, we get to, I mean, you're just a boy from East Texas. I'm just a guy from West Texas. Well, who are we, you know?
Nobody.
And then we get to be a part of it, you know, and just seeing how every one of these guys, there is exponential opportunity for growth. I mean, they're high capacity leaders. They're paying the price in so many ways.
Yeah.
And the fact that we get to contribute a little bit and be along for that ride is just a thrill.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad we get to do it.
Me too. You know, one last thing, one cool story, Ben. We just dipped our toe into something a couple weeks ago. We were back up in the Northwest area, and we did our first sort of pilot collab with Disciple First Leadership and Cross Creek Network Leadership. And we're already, you know, on the same team, but we went and did an event together and we combined some disciple making training. It was with a church plant. And then we also brought some of the people from our church that do typical community engagement stuff. And then I did some networking type things. So we brought all these things together, but it gave us a vision of what that could look like in the church plants that are in our network, of how we could go in and what's the value add we could bring on a training level, and what would be really specific and relevant to a church planter at his stage of development. Because as you guys would say, it's their stage is very different than established church, and so they have different needs. And so we've already started to look into that as to how we can actually bring these two organizations together on the ground. And we're doing some other collabs as well. The summit will be working together. You guys will be the summit with us this year.
That's right.
Leading out in that. That's going to be great. So exciting days.
So Craig, real quick, just as we close out, what do you, if you were talking, so a listener that we have, just a pastor that's out there that maybe has dismissed church planting from I'm from a small church, all this, but they're heart deep about making disciples who make disciples. What do you see the value from them personally, for them as a leader, to whether connect with us, connect with another, some other network, but what's the value for them to getting kind of in the game, so to speak, of church planting?
Yeah, that's great. It's a great question, because I think a lot of pastors can easily fall into the temptation of I just got to focus on growing my church. Why would I want to plant another church if we're still trying to figure out how to grow our church? But what I would say is that part of having a healthy church is being about the Great Commission. And not just about the Great Commission where you are, but where he's at work all around the world. And you don't have to recreate the wheel. It's not like you've got to find the planter and you got to train the planter and you got to cover all the expense. You don't have to do that. With the network, you can join in on something that's already going. And if you have 50 people in your church, you have 500 people in your, it doesn't matter. There's a place for you to play, to get involved. Yeah. And here's what I found. I found that as we are focused on the Great Commission, wherever God's at work, God just tends to bless us where we are.
Yeah.
I can't on a spreadsheet connect those dots, but I can tell you that God has blessed our church in ways that that I don't know how to explain of people coming to Christ, of the ministry growing. And I don't look at it and say, well, it's all these strategies that we did. But I just tend to think that God just blesses those who bless his people. Yeah. And those that just dare to join him where he is, he's going to say, that's the kind of church that I want to fill. And he said, I will be with you. When you're about the Great Commission, I will be with you to the ends of the earth. His presence will be with those who are with him.
Yeah.
And so if you're like, man, I got to get in the game, you just get in the game now. Don't wait, you know, 10 years from now, do it now. Get in the game. You can join our network. I know there are other opportunities, yep. but we would be happy to join with you and show you how you can get involved right now and see how God uses that and blesses that, not only there, but also where you are.
Yeah. And so to that point, as we wrap up right now, Clay, remind everybody, I think we kind of mentioned it through the episode, what are maybe two or three ways that someone can connect with you right now? We're going to have like the information and links in the episode of the episode notes. We'll have links for the Cross Creek Network so they can reach out and see what, but hey, just as they're listening to this, what are two ways that they can connect with you right now?
With some of our church planning opportunities or with me personally?
With the Cross Creek Network, where are maybe some opportunities they could connect or you know, how do they partner with you or how do they come check out your church plants? Just maybe ways that they could kind of see and explore who you are as a network and maybe where they would be able to serve and partner with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha. Well, November 5th and 6th, we're hosting our annual Cross Creek Network Summit. And that's we bring in all of our church planters and, we're going to be doing disciple making training and just, you know, encouraging and strengthening them. We're inviting a limited number of pastors this year to that training, and so that would be an opportunity to rub shoulders, to get disciple making training, but you're doing it in the context with church planters. So that adds a little bit of a different vibe to it. This next year, we'll be hosting our first ever vision tour. We'll be in New York City. Mm-hmm. Also, it's going to be a limited number, and so it's not just an all call. When you reach out to us, when those dates are published, we'll let you know what our capacity is and what that would take. Yep. But the goal of that is to get you up in the environment with one of our church plants in New York City and to see what they're doing now, the opportunities in front of them, the future, what they're looking at. It's kind of a 36 hours, you know, it's not a long time. And then you would get the chance, you would be challenged, to be very clear to say this, you would be then challenged to how would you want to partner with and support them. So it's not just a tour.
Yeah.
It's come and engage.
Perfect.
So those are some things that are coming up here in the next few months.
Yeah. And that's great. And we want to make all that available. And like I said, we will have all of Clay's information for the network and just how you could reach out, learn more. And as always, you can reach out to us at disciplefirst.com on our website through contact us. And we'd be glad to direct you that way. Clay, thank you so much for your heart. Thank you what you do. And just the hard work traveling and working all over the world, but really your passion to see disciple making churches planted.
It's a blast.
And so thank you for that. And Craig, again, thank you for always being here and the encouragement you are to not only just bring health and, you know, life here through making disciples like Jesus, but, you know, sharing that with other people and really trying to put a lot of resources and time into not just keeping it here at Cross Creek, but letting that movement kind of go out and spread out. So thank you for your leadership.
Amen. My privilege and my joy.
Well, thank you for listening today. Appreciate you joining us on this episode, and hopefully it was helpful to you. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.